It is all my brother's fault.
A throat-clearing had Stevie looking over her shoulder. Dr. Gertner motioned her with a wave of his hand, and Stevie nodded and stood. She looked at the man sitting across from her.
Why don't you take over, Dr. Schmidt?
Since I am the actual trained psychiatrist here,
he sort of snipped back.
Stevie smiled at him. And you are doing a great job.
She gave him a thumbs up before walking over to Gertner and following him out of the group therapy room. He led her down the long glass hallway toward the back exit. They often liked to talk while walking in the beautiful garden behind the clinic, one of Stevie's favorite places.
So, what's up? She asked.
I wanted to let you know before you heard from someone else. Your sisters came by today to see you.
Stevie stopped before they reached the doors and faced Gertner.
My sisters? They're here?
They were. I asked them to leave. I think we both know you're not ready to see them right now. Not when you're doing so well.
Stevie blinked and took a step back.
But they were here. Here at the clinic? Inside the clinic? Is that what you're telling me?
I told them when the time is right, we'd call them for a controlled meeting. With you and the team and your sisters.
Okay,
Stevie said to herself, not really listening to the doctor anymore.
My sisters were here. They were here.
She clasped her hands together and began to pace.
And you told them to leave. And now I'm alone. But I'm inside, so I should be fine.
Stevie, please, Gertner coaxed. You are fine. I simply was not going to allow your sisters to come here and interrupt the work we have been doing. It is much too important to your health.
If my sisters came here, it's because something's wrong.
She turned away from Gertner to walk back to the patient rooms. I need a phone. I need to call them.
No, no, Stevie. That is not a good idea.
He gently took her arm and tugged her back around.
You need time away from your family. Time away from the stress you experience.
Stevie gazed at the doctor, but she didn't really see him, because she could only think one thing. What did our father do now? That was the only reason her sisters would bother her while she was at a clinic. Because he'd done something. Sadly, he was always doing something, and it was always up to Stevie to stop her sisters from killing him, especially Charlie. Charlie loathed their father. Not that Stevie really blamed her, but he was their father. That mattered, at least to her. She was sure of it. Something was really wrong if her sisters had come here to get her, because they'd come to protect her. And this idiot doctor had sent them away. Had they really left, though? Had they really gone away? Maybe they were still around. Maybe she had time to catch up to them. Stevie turned to Dr. Gertner and calmly explained how she needed to find her sisters before it was too late and that she would, unfortunately, be forced to leave the clinic much sooner than she'd originally planned. Oh, wait. That's how Stevie had planned to handle it in her head, with logic and reason and a calm, rational demeanor. But when she faced Gertner, just seeing his face made her angry. Angry that she was now alone and frightened because, without speaking to her, he'd sent her sisters away. He should have spoken to her first. He should have said something. And her fear led to panic, which led to her hissing and throwing herself at Gertner, knocking him to the ground, and wrapping her hands around his throat. Sitting on his chest, she hissed again, this time right into his face. And she had a feeling her eyes had shifted color because his own eyes widened, and she suddenly smelled urine, meaning the man had pissed on himself. Huh. Maybe not just her eyes. Maybe her fangs had made an appearance, too. That happened when she lost control. That's why she went to places like this, to get control of her panic disorder with the help of talk therapy and medications, to learn how to manage it and to fully understand it so that she didn't have what her coworkers fondly called a McKilligan episode. And Gertner had been right. Stevie had been doing well. She had been feeling better, more in control without any additional meds. But her sisters had come here, and they didn't bother her lightly. Her sisters never got in the way of her work or her mental health. They worried about her, and they sometimes babied her, but they never would have just dropped by for a how-do-you-do. That was not her sister's way. Stevie knew they kept an eye on her. She knew that one of them was always close by. But again, that was not because they were obsessive about her. They were obsessive about what their father had, to quote Charlie, fucked up now. She would have made that clear to Gertner if she'd thought about it. But it never occurred to her that he'd stop her sisters from visiting, that he thought they were somehow the reason behind her panic disorder. If anything, her sisters were the reason Stevie hadn't spent most of her life in a straitjacket at Bellevue. Their pesky ways and less-than-stellar educations allowed Stevie some much-needed distraction from the cacophony of sights, sounds, and information that packed her brain each and every day. The truth was, her sisters kept her sane, which was more than this damned doctor was doing. Big, strong hands gripped Stevie and yanked her off the doctor, and someone shoved a needle in her arm. A strong drug was injected into her veins, and she felt a brief moment of euphoria, a moment that allowed those holding her to think she'd been controlled. But Stevie wasn't completely human, and, even worse for the staff, she was half honey badger. And thanks to her father's confused genes, her body didn't process drugs and poison the way an ordinary full human or shifter did. Even the medication she took to manage her panic disorder had to be tested and retested continuously for years by a shifter-run medical group in Germany to get the dosage exactly right for her biological makeup. So if they thought filling her up with whatever calming drug they gave the regulars was going to really do anything... The euphoria passed as quickly as it came, and Stevie yanked her arm out of the grip of one orderly, pushed the other orderly off her, and without much thought to consequences, yanked the needle out of her arm and rammed it into the eye of the third orderly reaching out to grab her. He went down screaming, and in full-blown panic now, other people's screaming always freaked her out, Stevie screamed along with him as she made a mad run for the exit. Chapter 3 They hadn't left the Swiss Center yet, and Charlie knew the longer they stayed, the more concerned those orderlies were going to become. Already there were five of them standing outside the front doors, waiting for the pair to leave. Hoping to calm them down, Charlie found a map in the glove compartment and spread it out on the hood of the Mercedes. Max watched her and finally asked, "What are you doing?" "Trying to calm them down by looking like we're lost," she softly replied. "Why?" "Because we're making them nervous." "We make everybody nervous. Who gives a fuck?" Charlie placed her hands on the hood and asked, "What's it like to be you, Max? Not to care? Ever?" Max shrugged. "It's awesome." Charlie let out that sigh she was convinced she only used when it came to her middle sibling. "I'm not going to argue with you today," Charlie announced. More for her own benefit than for Max's, because Max didn't give a shit. "We have too much going on." "So, do you want me to look intensely at the map like it's still 1982? Max asked. "You know, rather than just using my fucking phone to take us anywhere we need to go in any part of the world?" Charlie briefly wondered if slamming her sister's head against the SUV's hood would be considered arguing when the front doors of the clinic burst open and her baby sister came rushing through. An orderly instinctively reached out and grabbed a hysterical Stevie. But that was not a good move. Not a good move at all. Stevie spun and slammed the palm of her hand up, ramming the orderly's nose and crushing it. He released her, and even though the others hadn't moved, Stevie kicked one orderly in the groin, another in the leg, breaking the fibula with a cracking sound that echoed around the quiet area. Another got a punch to the face that seemed to break his jaw and cheekbone, and the last was punched in the throat. The orderly that had followed her outside had spun back around and returned to the safety of the center in order to get reinforcements. That's when, screaming like she was on fire, Stevie ran for her life. So oblivious to everything around her, she didn't even see Charlie and Max standing there, watching her. She just took off running. And with the tiger blood flowing through her veins, she hit 40 miles per hour pretty damn quickly. Max watched their panic-riddled sister tear off across the front lawn and hit the road that would lead out to the main highway. "Guess the doc told her we'd been here." Then she laughed because, well, it was kind of funny. "Look at her go! I think sparks are coming off her feet." "Come on," Charlie ordered Max, tossing the map off the SUV hood. "We have to catch her." They scrambled into the SUV and sped after their sister, heading down the long road that led to and from the clinic. On both sides were thick forests. "If she goes into the woods, she's panicking," Charlie reminded Max. "She's just going to run until she can't anymore. She's so fast. In short bursts, she has no stamina." Not an insult, just reality. Again, it was the tiger in her. The wolf and honey badger in Charlie meant she could trot for hours. Not that she ever did. Why bother when she could just as easily rent a car? Max suddenly hit the brakes, and Charlie let out a relieved breath when she saw her baby sister standing in the middle of the road, taking in deep gulps of air and sobbing. "I'll get her." Charlie opened her door. "And when I bring her back, you be nice," she warned. "I'm always nice," Max laughed. "Shut up." Charlie walked around the car and over to her baby sister's side, but she didn't touch Stevie. She didn't put her arms around her and hug her. That was just a quick way to get her face torn off. "Stevie," she said her sister's name flatly, with authority, her voice low. "Stevie," she repeated. Blinking away tears, Stevie straightened her back and focused on Charlie.
"Charlie?"
"Hey, Bubs."
"Charlie!"
Now Stevie was in her arms, hugging her tight, and Charlie hugged her back because she was no longer worried about getting her face ripped off.
"You didn't leave me! You didn't leave me!" she chanted.
"Of course we didn't. We were just trying to find a way to get to you without the staff knowing." She stroked Stevie's hair. She'd started dyeing it a nice, safe blonde. Charlie kept hers brown, and Max dyed hers any color she was in the mood to see for a few weeks or months. They did this to avoid the questions. So many questions about their hair. "How bad is it?" Charlie asked. Swallowing, Stevie took a step back, her gaze focused on the trees behind Charlie's head. Charlie knew that look. "Is anyone dead?" Charlie now asked, worried about her sister's answer.
"No, no."
Her voice lowered even more.
"No."
Stevie cleared her throat.
"Someone may have lost an eye, though."
"Okay." Charlie grabbed her sister's arm and quickly led her to the SUV, pushing her into the back seat and getting in beside her. "Go, Max." The car took off, and Charlie held her baby sister's hand and calmly spoke to her. "Deep breath in, deep breath out. In, out. Close your eyes and just focus on the engine sounds, the road beneath the wheels, the air against the car." "You're whining against my nerves," Max joked from the front seat. Stevie's gold eyes popped open, and she rammed the flat of her hand against the back of Max's seat. "Hey!" Max barked.
"Do you know what I've been through?" Stevie yelled. "Do you have any concept?"
"Keep yelling at me, and I'll give you something to really whine about." Unable to stand another second, Charlie slapped her hands together several times and yelped, "That is enough. We don't have time for you two psychotic females to be bickering like we're still in grade school."
"Wait,"
Stevie said, the anger in her voice gone, unfortunately replaced by hysteria.
"Do you hear that?
Stevie, you need to..."
"No, listen."
Charlie did, and she heard it too. "Is that a chopper?" As soon as Charlie asked the question, the military-type chopper charged past them, so close Charlie was surprised it didn't hit the roof of the car. Max slowed to a stop. The chopper turned and came back, hovering about 50 feet away. "Dude," Max demanded, trying to look back at Stevie over her seat, "what kind of mental hospital did you go to?" The target and her sisters waited in the SUV.
"Stay here," he ordered the pilot. "Give them a minute to figure out what's about to happen."
"Got it." The original plan had been to take the target in the clinic. but he'd just been heading toward the building when she'd run out, hysterically screaming. He'd immediately gone back to the copter, especially when he realized the two older sisters were still alive. His orders had been painfully simple. Pick up the target and bring her to the safe house. Two other teams had been dispatched to take out the troublesome older sisters so they couldn't get in the way. Apparently, they had a reputation that had his clients concerned. But somehow those two had gotten away from full tactical teams. He still wasn't sure how they'd managed that. The sister on the driver's side eased out and headed toward the back of the SUV.
"Want me to take her out?"
"No," he replied immediately.
"We keep them alive until we have the target. They'll keep her pliable."
"She's probably going for a weapon." He wasn't worried. The copter could handle a few gunshots. Tapping the mic, he began the negotiation process. Still in the back seat with Stevie, Charlie focused on her baby sister and ignored whatever the man in the chopper was saying. Most would be concerned with the chopper guy, but he was the least of her problems. Already Charlie could see the panic welling up again in Stevie. And if Stevie snapped,
"What's going on? Who are these people? They're not from the center. What did Dad do now?"
Stevie spit out in rapid succession. Then she asked,
"Why are they doing this? What are we going to do?"
There it went, that high-pitched squeal that said Stevie was moments away from going into full panic mode. "Don't worry about them," Charlie told her sister. "Let's focus on your breathing." Stevie calmed down enough to glare at Charlie. "Seriously? I'm trying to help. I'm not an infant."
"Fine, then balls the fuck up."
"Don't snarl at me,"
Stevie shot back, her panic finally overridden by anger, which Charlie welcomed.
"If you only would..."
Both sisters screamed and ducked down, hands over their heads. The entire SUV bucked from the explosion. They waited a few seconds before sitting up and staring out the front window with their mouths open as the remains of the chopper landed all around their vehicle. And with the chopper were the remains of several men, their charred bodies, and pieces from those bodies, banging against the vehicle and ground with nauseating thuds. Charlie heard Max humming and turned to see that she had the back door open and was returning the weapon she held to its case.
"A rocket launcher?"
Charlie exploded.
"Oh, my God!"
Stevie gasped.
"Have you lost your mind?"
Max shrugged.
"What? I wasn't about to get into a shootout with them. That's a military chopper. Did you see the Gatling guns on the sides?"
"I don't care, you idiot. What are we supposed to tell the Swiss authorities?"
Frowning, Max asked, "Why would we talk to anybody about this?" She closed the back door, went around the SUV, and got into the driver's side. She stared out the front window for a moment, got back out of the SUV, and walked around the front, kicking bodies and big, burning chunks of the helicopter out of the way to make a path through the debris. When Max returned to the vehicle, she buckled her seatbelt and glanced back at Charlie and Stevie.
"Ready to go?"
she asked, smiling. Chipper, even. In fact, extremely chipper. Like they were going to brunch. How did she do that? Unlike her sisters, Max was all honey badger, and yet she had the most pleasant, happy, almost sunny disposition Charlie had ever known. Charlie had never met another honey badger like her. "Stop smiling," Charlie ordered her sister. And, of course, Max's smile grew until it took up most of her face. Charlie nearly had her hands around Max's throat, but Stevie wrapped her arms around her and dragged her back against the seat.
"What are you mad at me for?"
Max asked, oblivious as always.
"Just go," Stevie ordered,
"and shut up. Both of you are so moody."
Max took the car out of park and drove through the path she'd created until she was able to enter the woods. This got them off the road and, hopefully, away from any law enforcement who'd be heading this way. So this was what it was like to be a true maestro. Berg thought he'd gotten it before, but he hadn't. Not until men came from the Vatican, sent personally by His Holiness so that they could escort Coop to his next venue. Even cooler, They were waiting to board a private jet that was only used for His Holiness. The Pope had sent it to transport Coop and his entire team, and apparently he wouldn't take no for an answer. Coop had tried, politely, not wanting to put the Pope and his attendees out in any way. And Coop wasn't bullshitting. He really didn't like to put people out. But again, His Holiness wouldn't hear it. Of course, Coop had not asked for any of this. But his sister? Well, Tony Jean-Louis Parker Reed was a different matter. Plus, she was trapped in Siberia at the moment and couldn't make her way to Italy just now. At least not in time to help. So she'd called the Vatican herself. Of course she did. And had them make all these arrangements. For her brother's safety, she'd said. A sentiment that Berg could only roll his eyes over. "Hey, Berg," Coop said next to him. "Huh? My sister is sending even more backup to get us home." Berg rolled his eyes again. "Oy." The jackal chuckled. "Don't take it personally. It's just my sister's way. She can be obsessive when it comes to her siblings. Among jackal families, she's considered the gold standard of proper older sibling behavior." "Is she sending someone I'm going to hate?" "I don't think so. But I can never tell with you and your brother which people you guys hate. Unlike your sister, who was very direct about her hatred." "You do always know where you stand with my sister. I heard she'll be the one handling," he made air quotes with his fingers, "Tony when she gets here." "Well, Dag and I weren't going to do it."
"Nope,"
Dag muttered.
"I don't blame you. She wanted to fire you guys, by the way. But I said absolutely not. They're my friends. And so what if they put me in grave danger and put my life and, more importantly, my God-given gifts at risk? A loss that would deprive the entire world, maybe even the universe, of something truly amazing. They're still my friends."
Berg gazed down at Coop.
"How big of you."
"I thought so."
"We're friends?"
Dag asked.
"The jet is ready, maestro," one of the Vatican's men announced. With Dag on one side of Coop and Berg on the other, the trio began to walk toward the door that would lead them to the private airstrip. But as they passed the front desk, Berg caught sight of the TV behind the attendant. Both he and Coop stopped walking and briefly watched the Italian-language news announcement about a helicopter in Switzerland that had been shot down on a private road. Coop didn't understand Italian, but he got the gist of the story from the visuals. He looked at Coop and the jackal stared back, both of them silently asking the question. Then, after several seconds, they both said together,
"Nah,"
and continued on toward the awaiting jet.
"Get out. I have to set this thing on fire."
Charlie stared at her sister. "Are you just on a rampage? What are you doing?"
"Don't worry. We have another car waiting right there. We're totally covered."
With another pleasant smile, Max walked off. "She's going to get us killed or put in prison for the rest of our lives," Stevie informed Charlie. "I just want you to know that."
"I wish I could argue with you," Charlie admitted. "But I can't."
They got out of the car, each grabbing a duffel bag from the back of the SUV, and headed in the direction Max pointed out to them. As Charlie walked, she smelled smoke from behind her just before Max ran up to them. Another bag was hanging from her shoulder, and the— Charlie stopped, and her sister stopped with her.
"You brought the rocket launcher? You expect me to leave it? Do you know how much these things cost? Especially the really compact ones? Are you nuts?"
she scoffed before heading off again.
"You know," Stevie noted, "we could kill her here and bury her and no one would ever know."
She frowned, shook her head.
"I guess that was a horrible thing to say."
"No, sweetie, it was just a honey badger thing to say. Nothing to worry about. I say honey badger things all the time, but never do them." They followed Max, reaching a brand new Range Rover painted a very bright red. "Subtle," Charlie said to Max. Her sister grinned, oblivious, and quickly began packing the trunk, stopping to answer her vibrating phone.
"We're all going to jail, aren't we?"
Stevie suddenly asked as she and Charlie finished up the trunk packing. Not if I can help it, Charlie promised. I've worked too long and hard for any of us to go to prison now. She paused a moment, then added, But if we have to sacrifice someone, it'll be Max. She could handle prison way better than either of us. After a few minutes, Max returned to their side, and Charlie knew, as soon as she saw her sister's face, that something had changed. What? Charlie asked when Max didn't say anything. Max glanced at Stevie, then back to Charlie. I just got a call. From New York.
Oh, God, Stevie began. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Stevie, Charlie said, raising one finger. No. She could see her sister was readying herself for another panic attack, and Charlie simply didn't have the patience for it right now, especially when Stevie could go from zero to hysterical in 6 seconds. She was the Ferrari of panic. Breathe, she ordered Stevie before facing Max. Who do we know in New York?
Not a lot of people, but...
She cleared her throat, glanced at Stevie, who was now doing her deep breathing exercises. It's Dad. Charlie briefly closed her eyes. Let me guess. He's in jail. He wants bail. Well, fuck him. I'm 1,000% positive that we're on the run because of him, so he can stay in jail until he rots.
He's dead, Maxie abruptly announced. They need someone to identify the body.
Stevie put her hand to her chest and turned away from them, her head bowed, shoulders beginning to shake, her pain and grief clear to anyone who might be near. Charlie and Max, however, didn't hesitate to silently bop around each other, performing dance moves they really shouldn't because they just didn't have the talent for it. However, it wasn't a dance of skill, but of excitement, of relief, of downright giddiness. Neither sister spoke as they boogied around each other because words weren't necessary. But despite their silence, Stevie slapped her hand against the Range Rover and snarled,
I know what you two are doing back there, and stop it! He's still our father!
Chapter 4 It took a few days to make it into the States, and it hadn't been easy. But Max had a lot of connections, which always helped when they were in foreign countries. Thankfully, they were back now and able to drop their bags in the middle of the safe house Max had found through her birth mother's family. Wow, Charlie said, looking around. This place is awesome. Your aunt hooked us up. Max nodded. It's not bad. Stevie sat in the farthest corner and deepest part of the couch, her knees up, arms around her calves.
I don't like it.
Why not? Charlie asked. Her nose crinkled.
It smells funny.
That's just badger. Max took another sniff.
And something bearish.
Stevie's eyes grew impossibly wide.
Bears eat people.
I'm taking a shower, Charlie announced, because she couldn't start down this road with her sisters. Then we'll figure out next steps, okay? When she got nods from both, Charlie grabbed her duffel and headed deeper into the Manhattan apartment. The place was beautiful. Big, comfortable furniture, lots of windows allowing for light, and tons of cabinet space for the honey badgers to sleep in. Charlie was surprised the Yang family had helped Max get this place for them to stay in, even temporarily. Maybe Max hadn't mentioned that her sisters would be with her, but she didn't usually hide that from anyone. The Yangs had made it clear long ago that they would be more likely to help Max when she needed it if her half-sisters weren't involved. They'd never quite forgiven Max's mother for hooking up with Fred McKilligan. Among the honey badger population, the McKilligans didn't have the best reputation, especially when it came to good old Freddy, the most useless of beings as far as Charlie was concerned. To this very day, she still didn't understand what her amazing feminist mother, or any other woman for that matter, saw in her worthless excuse of a father. He was worthless. She had no other word for it. Or maybe she had too many words for the man. Many ways to describe how worthless he truly was. But that was over now. Her father, thankfully, was rotting away in a New York City morgue, just waiting for her and her sisters to identify and bury him. Charlie couldn't wait. She knew it sounded cruel to those who didn't know her father, who didn't understand why she disliked the man so much. But she had her reasons, and those reasons were all she needed. If nothing else, she hoped his death would end the bad luck that seemed to follow the man around and, in turn, follow his daughters around as well. Daughters who hadn't asked to be born, definitely hadn't asked for him to be their father. Three girls who'd had no say in what they'd already been through. Yes, she blamed her father for all of it, but she wasn't about to let that get in her way, because it was a new day. She just had to be cool about it. Stevie didn't like their father any more than Charlie and Max did, but she took the fact that he was their sperm donor much more seriously. She would want to mourn his death, and they had to respect that. Which reminded her. Naked, Charlie walked out of the bathroom, where the shower was now running. She went into the living room and found that Max and Stevie already had each other in headlocks. Max grinning, Stevie cursing Max. The never-ending battling sisters was what the pack had called Max and Stevie. And it was true. The pair of them could and would go at it until someone separated them or an ambulance had to be called. The thing was, an ambulance rarely had to be called for either Max or Stevie. If there was one thing that was true about all McKilligan females, they could take a beating. But teachers, coaches, strangers on the street, anyone who thought it was a good idea to get between the sisters to stop them from fighting, always found out the hard way that it was not. But Charlie wasn't some stranger on the street. She knew how to handle her sisters. It was the first thing her mother had taught her when she realized how poorly the two got along. Going behind both women, Charlie grabbed Max by the tough skin of her back and swung her one way, then the other. Poor Stevie forced to go with her. And while Charlie swung, she kept chanting, "Let her go, let her go, let her go," until Max did what she was told to do. "On the couch," Charlie ordered, pointing at Stevie. "You, on the chair." She motioned to the leather armchair until Max sat down. Once both her sisters were sitting away from each other, she said, "Now listen up. I'm going into the shower. It will be a long shower, a luxurious shower." "Why not a bath?" Stevie asked. "I don't like baths. I don't like soaking in my own filth." Max started laughing, but stopped when Charlie snapped, "Shut up! Now, while I'm in that shower, you two will not argue. You will not fight." She pointed at Max. "You will not startle." She pointed at Stevie. "You will not throw things, no matter what she says to you," she added quickly before Stevie could argue. "Let's just be glad that we made it back to the States without killing each other or getting arrested. Let's enjoy this moment for what it is." "The death of our father?" Max asked. Charlie glared at Max for a moment before they both raised their arms in the air and cried out, "Hooray!" "Ladies!" Stevie barked, disgusted. "Sorry, sorry." Charlie didn't want to upset her sister. She wanted a shower too badly. A nice, normal, relaxing shower. And she couldn't have that if she was worried the two of them were attempting to kill each other in the next room. "We'll get through this, Stevie," she promised her baby sister. Stevie nodded and moved deeper into the couch corner until she couldn't move any farther. She placed her feet on the cushions, wrapped her arms around her calves, and rested her chin on her raised knees. Charlie pointed at Max one more time, letting her know in no uncertain terms that if anything happened while she was showering, Charlie would absolutely blame Max for it, because most likely it would be Max's fault. Max reached for the remote and turned on the enormous high-end TV in the middle of the room. "Oh, look," Charlie pointed out. "Law and Order." "Thank God," Stevie muttered. Funny, since Stevie always went on and on about how much she didn't watch TV. "Excellent," Max chimed in. "One of the early episodes, before cell phones and social media." Knowing they'd be entertained for a few hours at least, Charlie headed off to her very hot and relaxing shower. Max was so tempted to fuck with her sister, but Charlie's warning had been very clear. Charlie was all about being clear. She didn't like vague. She didn't like subtle. She didn't like when people weren't direct. Why? Because Charlie was always direct. when Charlie had told her once, "If you bother Stevie while she's taking that test, I'm going to break your arm." She'd meant it. Max had been forced to wear that cast for, like, 2 days, the break was so bad. But she'd learned her lesson. A Charlie warning was serious stuff, and you ignored it at your own peril. Deciding to help make this easier for everyone involved, Max got up and grabbed Stevie's backpack. They'd run by that CERN place and picked up a bunch of her stuff so that she'd have things with her to keep her calm, like all her notebooks. And at this point, it was all about keeping Stevie calm. Not a small order, either. Calm was as foreign to Stevie as uptight was to Max. She placed the bag next to the couch Stevie was on and started back to her chair. She didn't look at Stevie or smile, because Stevie would assume Max was mocking her. And let's be honest, she probably was, and react accordingly. But just as Max was about to drop her ass in the big armchair, both sisters looked at each other and then at the front door a few feet away. Vic Baranov stood by his mate and smiled. They were finally home, and he couldn't be happier. They'd had to run over to Italy in a private jet to retrieve just one jackal. But that jackal was like family to his mate, and she'd insisted that Vic and his panda partner be the ones to go pick him up. Then she'd insisted on going with them. It seemed like a big deal for nothing until the news hit the States about the brutal hotel invasion in Milan involving Maestro Cooper Jean-Louis Parker. Suddenly, Vic understood why everyone was freaking out. But for someone who'd been through a horrible attack, one so bad his bodyguard had been shot and stabbed, good old Coop had seemed fine. More than fine. He'd still got to perform at Vatican City for the Pope, and he'd flatly refused to fire the three grizzlies who'd been the core of his protection, despite his older sister's near hysterical rantings about cutting them loose. But nope, Coop wouldn't hear of it, which basically told Vic all he'd needed to know. That whatever was going on, Vic didn't want to know. Instead, he'd let his mate and her best friend get crazed about protecting a jackal old enough to breed. Vic glanced behind him and saw the elevator doors open again. Coop walked out with two of his grizzly protection and Vic's partner, Shen. He didn't know why. Now that they were back on Coop's home turf, he couldn't get rid of them, but Vic wasn't going to complain. Instead, he'd just get into his house, go to his bedroom, and close the door, before the grizzly side of him got cranky and bit someone's head off, or his tiger side started clawing on human flesh to make it quiet. As a hybrid, he had many ways to stop people from getting on his nerves. Not that those options were morally right, but, you know. Looking down at his honey badger mate, Vic immediately noticed that Livy Kowalski had the key in the lock, but she hadn't opened the door. Instead, she stood frozen to the spot, her ears twitching right along with her nose. Then her eyes narrowed.
Livy?
She yanked the keys out of the lock, and her lips pulled back over her honey badger fangs. Then, her dark eyes growing even darker, Livy growled out,
"Badger!" "Livy, wait! Badger!"
Livy stepped back and kicked the door open, even though she had the keys in her hand and it was a $1,000 lock set on the door. Vic grabbed for her, but she jerked away and charged into their apartment, throwing her entire body at the female honey badger standing by Livy's much-beloved armchair, her favorite chair in the whole apartment. Nope, this would not end well. In horror, Berg watched two tiny Asian women go at each other like the wild animals they partially were. Snarls and snaps, blood flying as they rolled across the floor of Vic's beautiful apartment. And yet, Vic just stood there, doing nothing, while his mate was possibly getting her ass ripped apart. Things were moving so fast, Berg really couldn't tell who was doing what to whom, but he took all that blood as a bad sign. Maybe Vic was in shock or something. True, he had military training, but maybe this was causing some kind of flashback. Yeah, that was it. A flashback. Why else wouldn't he be helping the woman he loved?
Doug!
Berg called out to his brother before pushing Vic aside and rushing into the apartment. Berg grabbed the unknown female from behind, and Dag took hold of Livy around the stomach, lifting the tiny she-badger off her feet. And as soon as they did that, Berg knew exactly how stupid a move it was. The kind of move his sister would never let them get away with if she were anywhere near this situation. Why? Because she knew better. Size didn't matter when it came to shifters. Rage did. And these two women were all about the rage. The woman he held managed to twist around and latch her teeth into his neck, biting at the flesh of his throat, fangs digging for a main artery.
"Get her off me!"
Berg screamed, desperately trying to push her away.
"Get her off!"
But Dag couldn't help. He had his own problems. Livy had reached back with one hand and gripped poor Dag by the balls, and twisted. Then she kept twisting. Berg's brother dropped to his knees, his scream so high-pitched that Berg was sure dogs in Brooklyn could hear him. Livy pulled away from Dag and charged the other female. Unlatching from Berg's neck, thank you, God, the female dropped to the ground and backed up, hissing, then charged Livy. Livy backed up, then lunged forward. It was like a dance, a weird, horrifying dance of death. Berg fell back against the floor, his hand over his bleeding neck. He wasn't sure, but the tip of that woman's fang might have nicked his artery. And that's when he saw her. She'd been sitting silently on the couch, but when he locked eyes on her, she suddenly seemed to panic, like a house cat. Yeah, that was it. She panicked like a house cat. The woman scrambled onto all fours, her back arched. She bared her fangs, her hiss of warning skittering across the room violently, so violently that the sound alone made the furniture move. So much so that both the badgers were briefly distracted, blinking at each other and turning toward the female on the couch. And when they did, she really freaked out. Jumping straight up, she flipped in midair until she hit the high ceiling, her claws digging into the drywall. And that's where she stayed, hissing at them all with a rage that shook the windows, the shaking becoming worse when she suddenly roared, "What the fuck is happening?" A voice bellowed from the hallway that led to the bedrooms. Berg forced himself to look away from the panicked female and over to the hallway. And he saw her, a woman he had assumed he'd never see again. She had on nothing but a towel, her wet brown hair resting against her shoulders, the strands already beginning to curl, her dark brown eyes glaring at each of them, a vein in her neck and the side of her head throbbing.
"Somebody answer me!"
The she-badger pointed at Livy.
"It was her," she said, her voice flat. Not like she'd just been in a life-or-death fight. More like she'd been in a life-or-death nap.
"You're in my house," Livy barked back.
"It's a safe house," the badger snapped. "It's not your fucking house. You have to share."
"It is not a safe house, you worthless whore."
The badger's eye twitched the smallest bit. It was barely perceptible. But then she was reaching for Livy again, and Livy was ready for it. But the woman, the woman, clapped her hands together several times, and both badgers stopped. Which was weird. Hand claps never got Berg out of his grisly rage.
"Stop it, both of you. This is completely un...
Her voice trailed off, and she leaned down, eyes narrowing on Vic's mate.
"Oh, hi, Livy."
Livy gave a half-assed wave.
"Hi, Charlie."
Vic, finally, spoke, his forefinger jerking between Livy and the other badger.
"You guys know each other?"
With a small shrug, Livy admitted, "We're cousins." Shen laughed from the doorway.
"But even if we are family," Livy began.
Berg's attacker raised a brow at Livy.
"If? This is still my house, and you can't just come here and act like it's yours."
"Max?" the woman prompted when the other badger didn't say anything.
"What are you looking at me for?"
the badger demanded.
"It was on the list."
Livy frowned, nostrils flaring.
"What list?"
"The safe house list, online."
Livy went tense, her entire body vibrating.
"My house is on the safe house list?"
"What's the safe house list?"
Vic asked.
"It's where Yangs can go online to find a house to stay in when they're on the run."
Livy closed her eyes.
And my house is on the list?
Max the Badger shrugged.
Yeah, that's why we're here. It's not like I wanted to see you. I'll kill her.
Livy shook her head.
I'll kill her.
Livy,
Vic began.
I will kill her.
Livy jumped up and yanked a phone from her back pocket. She speed-dialed someone and stalked out of the room. Max smirked.
Let me guess,
she asked Vic.
Her mother put her on the list just to fuck with her?
Probably.
Still dripping from the interrupted shower, Charlie looked around the room, her eyes not even stopping on Berg before moving on to everyone else. She didn't remember him. He helped save her life, gave her his gun, and she didn't even remember him.
Seriously? Where's Stevie?
She asked. Grinning, blood covering her teeth, Max pointed. Charlie looked up and sighed.
Could you please come down from there? Now?
I'm quite comfortable right here, thanks.
Stevie McKilligan!
Claws were retracted and Stevie landed back on the couch.
No need to yell, she mumbled.
Wait,
Coop said, suddenly stepping in from the doorway.
Stevie McKilligan?
He smiled.
Is that you? It's me, Coop. Cooper Jean-Louis Parker,
he clarified when she only stared.
Remember? We studied under Maestro Raimondi and performed together for Europe's royal families. Is this ringing any bells at all?
No,
she replied. Then, before Coop could say any more, she raised her hand, palm out, and informed one of the greatest, most loved musicians in the world.
And to be quite honest, I can't deal with some obsessive fan right now.
Not a fan, Cooper corrected. We studied together. We were both prodigies.
Whatever. I'll get you an autograph later.
No, you don't
Sweetie, Charlie cut in. I really don't have time for this right now. Somebody just tell me what's going on. Livy's cousin shrugged.
Nothing. Why?
Max. Max grinned.
Sorry, couldn't help myself.
She laughed a little and pointed in her cousin's direction.
Based on the yelling in Cantonese from the other room...
It's Mandarin,
Vic corrected.
Oh, what?
Max suddenly barked at the startled bear hybrid.
You think because I'm half Asian I know Chinese? Because I don't know Chinese.
Told ya,
Shen chimed in before sliding into the armchair, although Berg had no idea what the giant panda was referring to.
But you two are family, Vic insisted. How do you not know what dialect your people speak?
Well,
Max began. We don't have time for that conversation, Charlie announced. She was still standing there, wet, in only a towel, and she didn't seem to care. Max, ignore the bears and talk to me.
They are all bears, aren't they?
Stevie suddenly looked at each and every male in the room, sizing them up. After she finished, she leaned toward her sister and loudly whispered,
We're all going to die.
I'm actually a jackal,
Coop corrected.
Do you think that matters?
Stevie bellowed hysterically. Charlie placed her fingertips against her temples.
We're not going to die and stop yelling, she sighed out. They're all giant man-eating bears except for my stalker.
I'm not a stalker, Coop argued.
Don't you see, Charlie?
Stevie leaned in, the scent of panic beginning to come off her in big, booming waves.
Bears kill. Bears kill, Charlie, and they're going to kill all of us.
Charlie quickly walked to the couch and grabbed a backpack from the floor. She pulled out a bottle of prescription pills, glanced at the label, then held it out for the other woman. Take this, she ordered Stevie before focusing on Vic and demanding, glass of water. Vic moved, rushing out of the room and returning in seconds. He handed the glass to Stevie, and Charlie placed several tablets into the woman's hand. Take them.
But,
Stevie tried, take them. Stevie did as ordered. Now, Charlie said, facing them all again. Where were we?
You were trying to justify breaking and entering, Berg announced. And you have absolutely no idea who I am.
Charlie stared at him across the room, and after a few seconds said, "Of course I know you. How could I forget?"
"You? Then what's my name?"
"Deuteronomy," she shrugged. "Dude for short." Coop burst out laughing, but all Berg could do was shake his head.
"Seriously?"
Max briefly closed her eyes.
"She doesn't know you, Deuteronomy, because she can't see you."
"My name is not Deuteronomy."
"Wow." Shen marveled at Charlie.
"You're really mobile for a blind person."
"She's not blind," Max said, laughing. "She's just not wearing her glasses or contacts." "What are you doing?"
Stevie screamed at Max.
"Why don't you just announce to the world that we're defenseless women just waiting to be murdered by bears?"
"Defenseless?" Berg barked. "I'm bleeding from an artery here."
"Don't be a baby," Max said, glancing back at him. "I barely grazed that artery."
"We're all going to die here," Stevie insisted, pointing at Max. "And it'll be all your..."
Stevie's rant abruptly stopped and her head dropped forward. After a few seconds, she began to drool. Max looked at Charlie.
"What the fuck did you give her?"
"Her Xanax, to deal with her panic."
"Are you sure that's what you gave her? Because you're not wearing your glasses, and she seems to be having a very intense reaction."
Charlie reached down and grabbed a bottle of pills out of her sister's bag again. She brought the bottle so close, her eyes narrowing into thin slits, that Berg knew Max hadn't been lying. This was a shifter who was not 90 years old, yet actually needed glasses because she couldn't see. She was nearsighted.
A shifter? Nearsighted? That was so... weird.
"Uh-oh," Charlie said, the pill bottle practically touching her nose. Max stared at her sister.
"What?"
She cringed and held the bottle up.
"It's lithium."
"Dude!" Max burst out along with a loud laugh.
"I know, I know!"
She dropped the bottle and grabbed a seemingly unconscious Stevie. She shook her sister. Then she slapped her.
"Stevie! Stevie!"
When her sister didn't respond, Charlie released her and threw up her hands. "I've killed her. Of course I've killed her. I knew one day I'd kill you all." Max finally got to her feet.
"Good Lord, get off the cross. We need the wood."
"What does that mean?"
"She'll be fine. At any point now, she'll projectile vomit, and then she'll be good as new."
Every bear close to Stevie suddenly moved back.
"Just go get dressed," Max pushed, "so we can get out of here."
"And go where?"
"I don't know. A hotel? Like normal people."
"Normal people aren't on the run for their lives."
"Oh," Max nodded. "I forgot about that."
Charlie flung her arms out from her sides before crossing them over her chest.
"How does one forget that?"
Max mimicked her sister by crossing her arms over her chest, too.
"I have a lot on my mind. Name one thing you have on your mind at this very moment."
The badger glanced off, gaze focusing across the room. And no, she never did answer the question. Stevie abruptly stood, arms spread wide, body crouched.
"Bears!"
she suddenly yelled.
"It's okay,"
Charlie said, standing in front of her, ready to sacrifice her body if her sister tried to get past her.
"Stevie, it's okay. Why don't you take a little nap?"
"Okay."
Stevie dropped to the couch, turned over, and started snoring. Charlie blew out a breath and suddenly smiled in his direction, although Berg was sure she still couldn't see him. Still yelling at her mother, Livy paced back into the living room from the hallway. Without making a sound, Max charged her cousin. Livy was so busy being angry she didn't even see her. But taking a step out, Charlie swung her arm in front of Max. Max's neck ran right into Charlie's forearm, and it was like she hit a stone wall, legs coming up while her head didn't move. Then she was flung backward. The badger hit the floor hard, laughing and coughing. Livy missed all of it, swinging around suddenly and pacing back the other way, still yelling at her mother. Charlie stepped over to Max, placing her bare foot on her sister's chest.
"Who's going to behave in her cousin's house?" she asked. "Oh, come on," Max said, still laughing.
Charlie leaned down and clapped her hands three times. Maxie!
I promise! I won't start anything.
Or finish, Charlie raised an eyebrow. Arguments begun at family dinners when you're 9 years old do not need to be avenged when you're 27. Do we understand each other?
I told her I'd kill her one day, and I meant it.
You were 9.
I still meant it.
Charlie rolled her eyes. Do we let it go? She asked. Or do I start dismantling body parts? Fine, I'll let it go.
It will not be forgotten, she added.
But I will let it go. Excellent. I'm going to get dressed so we can get out of here. You'll keep an eye on Stevie, yes? Make sure she doesn't choke on her own vomit or swallow her tongue. And I need you to figure out where we're going next. But be nice and respectful. Max gave a thumbs up, and her sister stepped off her chest and walked away. Wincing, Max sat up. She looked back at Berg and brushed her fingers against her own throat.
You still have a little blood dripping right there.
Berg growled at her, but she just laughed. Chapter 5 Berg helped his brother up off the floor.
I'm so glad Britta wasn't here,
Dag said, one arm around Berg's shoulders, his other hand cradling his balls through his jeans.
She'd have kicked our asses for getting in the middle of a honey badger fight.
We weren't thinking, that's all. Next time we'll know better.
Agreed.
Berg's phone sailed past Dag's head. As it hit the wall and broke into pieces, Livy stalked back into the living room.
I hate everyone, she announced to,
well, everyone.
Went that well with your mother?
Vic asked. So upset she couldn't even respond, Livy walked out of the room again. When she returned a minute later, she held a bandage. She tore off the backing and, without preamble, slapped it against the wound on Berg's neck.
Ow.
Don't whine, she snarled.
Hands on her hips, Livy said to Max, without even looking at her cousin,
Now I guess I'll go talk to Charlie, since she's the only one among you three that has any sense.
You should go talk to her. Max agreed with a smile. And make sure you keep that great attitude when you do. She'll love it.
No,
Berg said quickly, seeing exactly where Max was attempting to lead her cousin.
I'll talk to her.
You? Max asked. She doesn't even remember you.
That was hurtful.
Berg pushed his brother toward Vic.
Could you help Dag for me? I think he needs some ice.
Or a new penis.
They all turned to stare at the other honey badger, and Livy shrugged those massive shoulders and admitted,
I know, I should stop talking.
Berg headed deep into the apartment until he found the bathroom Charlie was in. She'd put on jeans and was bent over at the waist, finger-combing her wet hair. Not wanting to startle her, he quietly waited. But Berg was having a hard time not staring. She looked really good in those jeans. Then Charlie abruptly stood, and Berg realized she wasn't wearing a shirt, just a sheer, lacy bra. He was so surprised he tried to turn away but rammed into the doorway instead, nearly knocking himself out. Charlie was reaching for a comb when she heard that thud, followed by a,
Damn it!
She looked toward the bathroom doorway, but all she saw was a blur.
Sorry, a voice said. Didn't mean to startle you.
No problem. She combed her hair off her face.
And I thought you were more... dressed.
Charlie squinted down at herself. The nips are hidden.
Pardon?
Nothing. She looked at herself in the mirror, trying to figure out what to do with her hair. So what do you need? There was a pause, then...
Do you know who I am?
There was a room full of big guys in Livy's apartment, and she still wasn't wearing her glasses. She was lucky to recognize Livy. So she took a guess.
Deuteronomy? That is not my name.
She didn't have time to worry about some sensitive guy's issues. She had so much on her mind at the moment that she really couldn't be bothered. Still, she didn't want to be completely rude.
How about you give me a hint? She suggested. Okay.
I gave you a very nice, very expensive Ruger.
Shocked by that response, Charlie turned from the mirror and really studied the blur standing in front of her.
You gave me a Ruger? She asked. No one has ever given me a...
She took a small step back.
Oh, my God.
Charlie couldn't help but smile